Don't you know, I'd move heaven and earth to be together forever with you. That's Rick Astley. I'm Blake Murphy. This is an emergency episode of Jays Talk Plus. Julia Kreutz alongside me. If you're looking for the Raptor show, no Raptor show today because late last night, after AEW wrapped up their big wrestling pay-per-view, Jeff Passan breaking the news. It had been trickling out that the Jays and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. were closer and closer and closer. Jeff Passan breaking the news that it was done. A 14-year, $500 million extension for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to remain a Toronto Blue Jay. No deferrals, no opt-outs, nothing like that. Nice and simple. 14 years, $500 mil. It'll kick in starting next year. Julia, good morning.
Woof. Good morning, Blake. What a mad dash this was, but happy to be here. Definitely a historic day.
Yeah, very historic. Lots to break down from the financial component, the team building component, Vlad's place in franchise history when all is said and done. Dan Schulman's going to join us in a minute here as well. Two important questions before we get into that and talk to Dan. Are you familiar with Rick Astley?
I can't say that I am. I did see the name in your prep doc.
Yeah.
And as soon as you said, I'm Blake Murphy, and this is the Rick Astley, I was like, who's Rick Astley? They're already replacing me? What is happening?
Yeah.
But no. Tell me a little bit more about Rick Astley.
No, we're good. We're good on that. I will fill you in after the show.
Well, isn't that what we're here for?
Just like very, very of the 80s.
Oh, I love.
Yeah.
That's a good way to start.
How did you find out about the Vlad news, and what was your kind of snap reaction when you saw it?
Tons and tons of texts on my phone. This is supposed to be a day off for me. So, you know, slept in until 9:30 and immediately jumped out of bed and said, gotta go get ready because we're going to have a show today in an hour and a half. So that's how I found out. I think it was pretty appropriate way to find out. How about you?
Yeah, I was up still.
The
past, I still actually had a couple friends at my house. We've been like watching baseball and a bunch of other stuff all day. And then, yeah, the Passan tweet came down. And then obviously Shy, I think actually Shy was on top of it first, but I have alerts on for Passan still because I never turned them off at the end of the offseason. So that's how I saw it first. And then, yeah, diving in. Great work from Shy Davidi and Ben Nicholson Smith being on top
work.
Of it. Keegan Matheson as well, our pal. So it's kind of, I mean, there had been enough chatter. And we had enough anchoring to, hey, this is Vlad's ask. This is maybe the Blue Jays valuation that I don't know if you feel the same way, but I was pretty confident that if this got done, this is roughly what the terms would look like. So I didn't have to go through the sticker shock of, holy cow, $500 million.
Yeah.
I kind of assumed if we got the alert, if we got the news, this is the range it was going to be in.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, maybe this would have been different if we were having more serious and more solid conversations about this extension a couple of years ago, right, Blake? I think that the timing of this also matters. It feels like for years, what are we going to talk about come next offseason? Because it feels like for years, this has sort of driven the conversation around the Blue Jays every single offseason. And there's always the question of, will the Blue Jays extend Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? I believe to a lesser extent, Bo Bichette also enters in that conversation. But it seems like Vlad did have a little bit more of the leverage at this point. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't surprise you, right, to see the value, especially after all the reports and rumors that had been floating around. This could have gone very differently, Blake, had it happened at a different time, but here we are.
You mentioned, yeah, the different times that we've talked about this and explored it. And look, there are a lot of reasons why an extension potentially didn't get done earlier. If you're Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and you're coming off your 2023 season where you were barely above, you know, you hit like tie France for the year, that's not a strong negotiating position. You probably don't want to negotiate off of that. If you're Vlad coming off of 2021, you're probably asking for a deal similar to this back at age 22 when you haven't shown it over multiple years yet. And then the Blue Jays front office would obviously have the inverse. There, I think you could reasonably question and you could reasonably sit down with Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro and, you know, they wouldn't say it publicly, but if you gave them the old truth serum or something like that,
yeah,
you know, do you think you could have got a more team favorable deal done at some point over his 6 years of arbitration control? I think the answer is probably yes, but you also don't have, you know, the foresight to be able to predict that, well, there's going to be a Juan Soto deal that fundamentally shifts what the anchoring point is. And like, Vlad is not Juan Soto. Juan Soto plays a more premium position. He'll move to DH eventually, but at this stage, he's a better hitter.
Right.
He's, you know, comparable age and things like that. But that is such a market mover in terms of, hey, what do we compare contracts to? What does this discussion look like? And then Shohei a part of it as well, though Vlad clears Shohei here in terms of present day value because of all Shohei's deferrals.
Yeah, and we are going to now have, I guess that is the conversation that's going to replace the will they extend Vladdy, which is how can Vladdy actually make good on the on this deal? How can the Blue Jays actually get value or, you know, close to full value out of this deal? It doesn't seem necessarily likely that they will, right? But you kind of look at what Juan Soto did and really how much he moved the goalpost, if you will, for contracts. He's probably also not going to be worth as much as he signed for. But you and I were speaking a little bit before the show. And yeah, it's, I don't know. Back ends of contracts are so interesting.
Yeah, and look, that's not, you know, everyone signs these contracts knowing the back couple years aren't going to be that great. It's like, hey, can you get enough value during the prime years that it's worth it on the back? So, you know, you'd rather not give him $50 million for 8 years, you know, so stretch that out. So we'll talk more of the Juan Soto comp. Well, you mentioned, what does this look like for Vlad to return value? You know, what's the floor now? What is Vlad's baseline performance? We'll talk about all that. But right now, let's see how Dan Schulman's feeling. The voice of the Toronto Blue Jays at Sportsnet joins us now. Dan, good morning. Fun way to kick off the week in a new series.
Yeah, it was like everybody else in the world. The first thing you do when you wake up is you look at your phone, and that was a wow. Didn't expect to see that. I was not awake last night, so found out this morning, and I was on for like the last 90 seconds or so listening to you guys just before you brought me on, and I agree with every single thing you've said. Like, back end of the contract, who knows? We're not going to know that for a long, long time. But to me, there were two options here. They sign them or they lose them. And all things being equal, I like door number one. I like to sign them. And you know, because what would they do if they didn't sign them? Like, who would they go out and build around? Would it be harder to entice free agents, which can be challenging already? You know, you hope whether it's 7, 8, 9, 10 years, whatever the number is, you hope the front end, the front half, the front two thirds, whatever of the contract is good. And something you just said, Blake, you know, is interested me as well. Like, the AAV is important here because that's what goes up against, you know, your CBT, the tax limit, and that influences how much you can spend on other people. He's not close to the Soto deal. He's quite a bit longer than the Devers deal. And, you know, maybe that's where he should be. But ultimately, how much he hits over the next few years is going to determine it. And one night does not a contract make. But it would be really fun if he hit the ball over the monster once tonight, I think.
Yeah, what's it? I got it here somewhere. His career OPS at Fenway is 1.054. So I think it might be a good place to, you know, not debut, but, you know, make your a statement of intent for the fan base. And Dan, you mentioned though the AAV, based on the current contracts around baseball. Now, this is before, you know, Kyle Tucker gets his money or whatever, but Vlad would be ninth in terms of annual value heading into next year, the way things look right now. And then obviously this is the second biggest deal in terms of overall value. Look, I think we can read into this that, you know, Vlad had some obvious leverage here. You mentioned it's sign Vlad or let him walk. And when it's a player of Vlad's caliber, that compensation pick from the qualifying offer really doesn't move the needle. Hey, here's a guy who might make AAA 5 years from now. How much does, now that this is done, we shift the focus a little bit to, and look, the pressure's not on Vlad because he's got his money now, but pretty quickly this is going to turn to, hey man, let's see it, let's prove it, let's show it. How fascinated are you to watch how Vlad responds to this with, hey, distractions gone, no more questions about it, just go out there and hit?
Yeah, not like you can't make evaluations over a, you know, a 7 day period or anything like that, obviously. But yes, he's got a hit, and he had a 940 OPS last year. He was incredible last year. Mm-hmm. He had a 940 OPS, even though, like, in the middle of May, and you could probably find it quicker than I was, like, he was nowhere near that. I mean, the first 6 weeks of last year, people forget he didn't have a great start, and he still put up a great year. But it is incumbent upon him, pick a number, 850, 880, 900, 940, whatever, to be in that area, not to be a 760, 780 guy. You know, he's too good for that, and he's too important for that. And there, I think there's a lot more reasons to think he's going to be really, really good than just a slightly, you know, than just an above average hitter. But they need him to be. They've invested in him. They have shown belief in him. We don't know if the magic number was 500 present value. Like, they could have offered him, who knows, they could have offered him 10 years, 380, higher average annual value, but not as many years and not as big a total number. And maybe it was the 500 that he wanted. And if that's the case, and they went to 14 years to get to 500, that's them saying, okay, we believe in you. And now he's got to live up to their belief in him. And I think he will. Listen, he has said he's willing to play his entire career as a Toronto Blue Jay. No other player of this caliber that I can think of off the top of my head, certainly not in the current economic climate, has ever done that. So now it's incumbent upon him to hit. It's incumbent upon them to put a good team on the field around him. Like, there's risk on both sides. There's pressure on both sides. But there's also a possibility for a great benefit and reward on both sides as well.
Hey, Dan, thanks for doing this. You mentioned the Blue Jays' belief in Vladdy and kind of what this deal signals. You've been around longer than us, and I'm wondering, when you look at, you know, the term, the player that Vladdy has been, How do you sort of see, you know, what he can be for this franchise? Does he have the potential to be perhaps one of the greatest, if not the greatest, Blue Jays hitter, given the, I guess, the length of the contract and what we've seen so far from Vladimir Guerrero Jr.?
There's no question, and it's a great question, because if we said right now, who are the five greatest Blue Jays, and we probably wouldn't have the same five people, but Roy Halladay would be on the list. I think Dave Steeb would be on the list. Joe Carter, Roberto Alomar might be on the list. Carlos Delgado might be on the list, and Jose Bautista. Like, you know, just look at the guys on the level of excellence, right? None of them spent their entire careers in Toronto. Dave Steeb came close, but none of them spent their entire careers in Toronto. I could put George Bell up there as well. I mean, to have a guy from start to finish who could go into the Hall of Fame, there's been no player in the Hall of Fame who's only played for the Blue Jays. So, you know, on that level, he could differentiate himself from everybody else, and he certainly could be a Hall of Fame player, but he certainly, Julia, has a chance to go down as having done more, meant more, been here longer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, than any player who's ever played here. You know, again, let's revisit this in 2039 and see how it looks. Right now, 2025 is still a critically important year. It feels a little bit less like, if it doesn't go well, the whole thing's going off a cliff, though. You know what I mean? Like, like today may not have raised the ceiling, but I certainly think it raised the floor, because the floor was really low. If things didn't go well, now they're trading everybody, and what are they going to do? And listen, if things don't go well, they're still trading a bunch of guys, right? The guys who are on one-year deals or the last years of their contract or something like that. But I think the other thing this shows, is that ownership's going to continue to invest in this team. You don't put $500 million down on one guy unless you're willing to build around him.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go with this next. And the only other name I'll say is Tony Fernandez, because he is the all-time leader in games. But of course, he was a three-time Blue Jay who was in and out of here a couple times. Another guy who didn't spend his whole career here. And Vlad is already, you know, more than halfway to the all-time games leaderboard for the Blue Jays. So he's gonna kind of stand out. So you mentioned that for this year, look, if everything is bad by the middle of the July, we're gonna be having the same conversations we were having that time last year. Dan, hey, should you sell this expiring? You know, how can you restock the farm system? But I think what you're getting at is, when you look at 2026 and beyond, it's not see what you have in Arelvis and Barger and lose, you know, 95 games. It's now, well, Jimenez is here, Kirk is here, Vlad is here, Varsho and Gausman have at least another year, and I'd imagine Varsho is an extension candidate at some point. How helpful is this if you are Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro plotting out the medium term here?
Oh, I think it is very helpful. I mean, I think if Vlad weren't here, if you wanted to re-sign or extend guys or sign free agents, you had to go the extra mile, whether that's the extra dollars or the extra year or a combination of the two. Now you've got, obviously, an enormous building block, and you can say, hey, look who's going to be in the lineup hitting second, third, whatever it is, every day. And every day is every day, too, which is a nice thing, too. He's been a very durable, available player, which is not nothing. There's a lot of money on the IL around baseball, and Vlad hasn't done that, and that's something, too. I think it's very helpful for Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins. But even more so, you want to extend guys and pay them what they're worth. But if this team is going to get where it wants to get, the farm system's got to produce more. You need some guys. You need some good players making $850,000 on the team. You know what I mean? If you're spending 35.7 a year on Vlad and you got 96 over five on Jimenez, et cetera, et cetera, you need some low priced guys who are doing pretty well. And, you know, maybe Roden and Wagner and Barger and Arelvis are it, but there needs to be more. And I'm really hopeful in a couple of years, 2-3 years, we're talking about Trey Savage and Arjun Namala, and that Alec Manoah has had a nice comeback and Ricky Tiedemann got healthy. But, you know, let me flip it to the Boston Red Sox. You're going to hear a lot about Christian Campbell tonight when we do the game, weather permitting, if we do the game tonight. And, you know, Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer are considered two of the top dozen prospects in baseball. Like, the teams that are great have a great combination of they spend a lot of money and they produce a lot of their own players who come up through the system as well. So yes, I think it's very, very helpful for everybody involved. This is a strong, loud message to people within the organization and people around the sport about the Blue Jays ownership and front office's intent and desire to win over the coming years. But this doesn't, as you guys know, this doesn't guarantee anything. It's a great first step. It's certainly more of a happy day than it did. Like, this is, what's today, April 7th? April 7th is a happier day than February 18th was, right? Like, this beats the alternative of not signing him, but for them to get where they want to go, there's got to be more coming from the system in the next couple of years.
Ben, Dan. Sorry, I work with your son a lot, so forgive me there.
No problem.
you mentioned asset to management and where the farm system is, but there is one name that has always been said in the same breath as Vladdy's, and that is Bo Bichette. Obviously, we can't make any assumptions. There has been a ton of rumors about whether Bo wants to stay or not. He was pretty categorical in spring training in saying that he's focused on this year, but also he has had the dream of being one of those guys that play his entire career for the same team. He was very vocal about his friendship with Vladdy and the fact that they have been talking since they were 18, 19 about playing together for the rest of their lives. Where does Bo fit into all of this, especially now that this contract has been announced? And it's a pretty hefty contract that should make things a little bit more interesting payroll wise for the Blue Jays.
Right. Yeah. It's a great question. And I wouldn't for a moment try to say, I think Bo definitely would do this, or I think Bo definitely feels this, because I don't know. You know, Vladdy has been, he's more open, right? He speaks his feelings more often and more easily. Bo keeps more to himself. I don't know, Julia, what Bo Bichette, yes, he loves Vladdy. Like, I see them interacting, you know, in the little quiet moments enough in the clubhouse or whatever. They love each other. They're great buddies. But I don't know, like, after last season, how do you value him at this moment? I think everybody thinks he's going to be the Bo Bichette that he was the first 4.5 years of his career. And by the way, he's playing terrific defense so far this year. Like, I think the best defense that he's played, and we're talking about 10 games, but I think he's in a really good place and I think he's going to have a really good year. But I don't know. Are they going to give him a 10, 12 year deal? And would there, have to be an agreement that he's going to stay at shortstop the entire time? There are a lot of variables. Just as in any contract of that magnitude or this magnitude, the Vladdy contract, there are so many variables and so much unknown and risk on both sides. I'd love to give you a good answer, Julia, but I just don't know. I'm not sure. I think part of me, you know, feels like Bo, and I mean this as a compliment, is like a bet on yourself guy. Like, let me go out and show everybody what I can do, and let me, you know, maybe I'll test it, and then if I come back, I come back. But I don't really know. It wouldn't that be something though if they did that in a week or two or three? But I don't know if that's going to happen. And can they afford it? I guess they can. I mean, I don't know anything about their bottom line. Well, I guess we all know a little bit about their bottom line, but it would take a big, big deal to get him. And again, that would have to mean money's coming off elsewhere. And then you got to have some young guys, cheap guys who are really good. It would be fascinating, but it's not like I'm, waking up and looking at my phone every day, you know, checking on rumors about that or hearsay about that. So it seems less likely to me, but I'd be happy to be wrong about that one.
Yeah, about $50 million coming off the books, but you're going to have rotation holes to plug and bullpen holes right. to plug and things like that. So it doesn't go super far. And Dan, we got to save something for the winter meetings, right? Like when you're doing your Sportsnet Central hits in December, you got to have something to talk about. We can save Bo for that. Dan, before we let you go and get on with your day here, in the event that tonight's game does get rained out, who you got in the NCAA final? I know this is a year you've been locked in. What a year for you to be doing the SEC tournament when the entire like Sweet 16 is SEC. But we get Houston here against Florida.
I mean, if anybody had asked me before the tournament began, I had Florida, and maybe there was some recency bias there because, as you say, I had done a ton of SEC and had just seen them win the SEC tournament. They're fantastic. Houston is, and I think I've said this to you and I've said this to anybody who's asked me, and a bunch of the Blue Jay players love college basketball, and I enjoy chatting about it with them. Houston's got the 10 toughest guys in the country. They don't know how to give up. They don't know how to lay down. They don't know how to say we can't do it. And you saw that in the last 7-8 minutes of the game against Duke. They were just older and tougher and physically and mentally stronger. And they won the game because of that. I think Florida's going to win. I think Florida's got a talent advantage, and Florida is older than Duke, and they're a little deeper than Duke too. I think they're kind of immune to foul trouble to a certain extent, and they've got guys who can, a bunch of guys who can beat you at the end of a game by making a good play. So I would pick Florida, but I think it's going to be close. I've got a tremendous amount of admiration for Kelvin Sampson and what he's built there at Houston, what he's done moving into the Big 12 and being the best team in that league the last couple of years. I think he's the best coach in America. And if anybody can do this, I think it's him. But I think Florida's got just a little bit too much.
Yeah, and I know we canceled the Raptor show for this show today, but Jamal Shedd winning a bet against Brandon Ingram and RJ Barrett, so they have to wear Houston Cougars jerseys on Wednesday to the game, should be a lot of fun. I'd imagine we see George Springer in a UConn jersey today as well. He generally reps the UConn stuff, and obviously them winning the women's national championship yesterday. He's probably riding high off that one.
I would think so. Pete Walker and I were talking. Pete pitched at UConn, loves UConn basketball. And I congratulated him yesterday on the championship. And he informed me that over the last 31 years, so men and women, that's 62 champions, UConn has won 18 of the 62 national championships, which is really incredible. I think it's either 12-6 or 13. Like, the women have won more than the men, but it doesn't matter what it is. It's incredible, given how many great programs there are on both sides, that one program could win 18 out of 62 from this tiny little town of Storrs, Connecticut, that, you know, 40 years ago was nowhere to be found on the national landscape on either side, men's or women's. It's incredible what they've done. So if George has a UConn toque, he'll be wearing it. I know he's got a Hartford Whalers toque.
Right.
And given the weather, I think we'll see the Whalers toque. But if not, I'm sure it'll be something involving the Huskies.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see. Hope you guys get that game in. Dan, thanks so much for taking the time out this morning.
All right, guys. Thanks. Talk to you again.
Thanks, Dan. I can't believe you snuck in some basketball.
Of course.
Wow.
Dan is like, look, Dan is one of the absolute best play-by-play people in all of baseball.
Agreed.
He is also one of the absolute best college basketball. Like, when I talk to basketball people and Dan Shulman comes up, they're so excited when he's doing like the SEC tournament or previously the ACC tournaments and stuff like that. Like, the basketball people want Dan Shulman too. So I got to sneak it in a little bit. And he's the voice of Canada basketball, come big international tournaments and stuff. Had to do it.
We're really lucky to have him. We really are. Thanks, Dan, for doing this.
Honestly, I thought he would probably roll his eyes at me if I had done this, but I did think about setting it up as Vlad is the biggest contract the Blue Jays have signed since Dan Shulman came back here. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll give our takes on it. We got to look at this. You know, hey, is he going to return the value? What is the baseline for Vlad now? Let's look at some comps, contract-wise and performance-wise. And what does this mean for the Blue Jays 2025, yes, but 2026 and beyond, what does the kind of next wave of the core look like there? We'll also take a look at tonight's Red Sox-Blue Jays matchup. I mentioned it. Vlad has a 1.054 career OPS at Fenway. Richard Fitz, I know you have had a nice start in a small sample to your major league career. I feel like Vlad might be locked in tonight. Let's talk about it on the other side as Jays Talk Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreitz.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. 14 years, $500 million for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He will be with the Blue Jays, assuming no trade or anything like that. This is always the caveat when it's like, oh, Vlad's a Blue Jay for life. Oh, he'll be here until he's 40. He'll be here through, what year does that work out to? 2040. Unless he gets traded or something like that. But for now, for today, it looks like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is going to get his wish. He's going to be a Blue Jay for life. He's going to be extremely well paid to do so. So, Julia, $500 million. This is, look, there will be some analysis of this deal that looks at things like, hey, what's the dollar per wins above replacement? What's the, you know, let's compare it to what he would get on the free agent market. Hey, he made $28 million via arbitration this year. You know, what does that project to? But this contract, when you sign a 14-year deal, when you sign a deal of this financial magnitude, when it is the face of your franchise you're keeping long-term, there is more to this deal than just, hey, dollars per win on the field.
For sure. And of course, we have to look at the dollars per win, Blake. That is, without question, we have to do that as well. And a lot of it will be done starting tonight if we play this game, right? But this is about more than right now, and it is about more than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I would say that, first of all, it kind of indicates that this is not an all-or-nothing season, which we'll see what that does for the players on the field, for Vladdy himself, even for a guy like John Schneider. We'll see what that does. And there is the potential here that it actually does make a difference, because we kind of all knew coming into 2025 what was on the line. The fact that, you know, this core players has yet to produce a single playoff win and things along those lines. And it could very well be the last chance to make some magic happen, to make something happen for this group of players. We understand that that is where the Blue Jays were until last night. And now this just opens up not just a new competitive window, but a way longer competitive window than what we have seen in the conversations that we have had year over year with this core. So I think that's number one. And number two, Blake, you look at the Blue Jays' pursuit of free agents in the past. This signals very strongly to every marquee free agent that is going to hit the market from now until 2039 that the Blue Jays want to win. The Blue Jays are in it to actually make runs and stay competitive in the long term. The sort of the off-ramp was there for this season before they extended Vladdy. That's not the case anymore. This is not a team that is looking to, you know, maybe jump ship if things don't work out in 25. So it's not just about Vladdy. It's not even just about this group of players. It's about what comes next. And the fact is that the Blue Jays have quite a few pending free agents, you know, after this year and after 2026. You have a guy like Bo, you have Chris Bassett, even Kevin Gausman, Jose Berríos. So this is going to look, Chris Bassett, I believe this is his final year here. So there's going to be a ton of change no matter how you slice it. But having a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. as the face of your franchise for years to come should be a pretty big selling point for a franchise that has done a good job in the past at pitching free agents. Obviously, a few big misses for them, but this has got to help. Now, in terms of actual numbers and of actual value for the deal, I defer it to you because I do believe that you have more experience than me in that stuff. I can't even begin to comprehend what $500 million means.
Yeah, me neither in terms of the scale of how much real money that is. But to your point, you know, like, hey, you're trying to pitch the next free agent, and it's like, hey, who am I hitting behind? Who am I hitting in front of? Who's going to be around? Well, there's Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who's 26, and he's going to be here for a long time. There's Andrés Giménez, who is 26 and is going to be here for four more years beyond this. There's Alejandro Kirk now, who is 26 and is going to be here for five more years beyond this one. So you have, look, Dan's point earlier about hey, you got to get some farm system stuff going because
absolutely.
you're going to be expensive at the top. Even if you like the deal for Kirk, you like the deal for Jimenez, you like the first couple years of Vlad's deal, the ability to return, hey, $35 million worth of value, 35.7 is what it works out to annually. So even if you, hey, age 27 to 31, I think Vlad's going to return positive value on that. Well, you have this window here. You are going to have a little bit of financial flexibility, but you're going to have to fill 2-3 rotation spots. You're going to have to replace Bo Bichette or re-sign Bo Bichette. And yeah, you've got to, this is kind of the failing of this era from a front office perspective, you know, and whether, you know, they'll say the competitive baseball in September is meaningful, et cetera, but they haven't won a playoff game. They haven't gone on a deep run in this 6-year window they had with Vlad and Bo together while those guys were below market value price-wise. They have done a good job identifying free agent starting pitchers. The first couple years of the George Springer deal were fine. They got Anthony Santander on a deal that on its face is fine. And then you look at all the deferrals and it's like, okay, that's, you know, that's pretty low risk when you defer all that stuff. But what they haven't been able to do is, hey, there's this pipeline of young, inexpensive talent, not only to fill all those roster spots, especially on the pitching side. Like the fact that not only have you Bowden Francis is a win, but Bowden Francis was also picked up on trade and got through getting DFA'd. Like you got a little lucky that Bowden stayed in the organization.
Certainly. Yeah.
And then you haven't even had the pitching development of like, well, this guy failed as a starter, so now let's make him a reliever. It's constantly the DFA churner going outside the organization. So you need to start stacking some of those wins because, you know, your window to spend liberally in free agency was when Vlad and Bo were a little less expensive. Now that they get full freight, you got to hit on more of those marginal ones. Or you got to spend like a top three payroll, which in purely economic terms, after you dump that much money into the stadium and you got seats and suites to fill, I wouldn't argue with it.
Right.
You could just spend at that level. As well. I run into this with Raptors all the time. It's like, well, how do they get out of luxury tax? I'm like, well, here's like 50 different scenarios. Or they just pay it. So that's how I feel about the payroll. But no, the point you're making is a good one that, hey, this is, you know, there is a core established here. And even if because of Bassett and Bo and, you know, the farm system not being, like, let's say they're bad in July, maybe they do run way off for the rest of the season, but it won't be the full tear it down to the studs it may have looked like if you're losing Vlad and Bo and those veteran pieces. So that is a positive. The medium term is, I think, where it really, like, the short term, the team's the same.
Yeah.
Long term, you'll have some questions about how the Vlad deal ages and how he ages. But the medium term is where this really resolves a lot of the discomfort of direction.
Right on. And, you know, to your point about the farm system, the farm system is still pretty bad. And even when you look at farm system rankings and all of that, it's not where the Blue Jays would like it to be or where anyone really would like it to be or where we expect it to be.
Yeah, even like a Jeff Ponce at Baseball America is, I think, the most robust of the prospect people on the Blue Jays. And he's a regular on our show, obviously. And he would have them, you know, they've nudged up to like average range.
Right.
So they're not like,
that's pretty generous.
All the other teams in the AL East are also like very good at farm system wise and developmentally.
So. But you look at what they did at the trade deadline, it kind of started to address that problem a little bit. Obviously, when you have a season that goes as awry as 2024 did for the Blue Jays, then you have the chance to add a Jake Bloss and a Jonathan Class A and a Charles McAdoo, which may go down as a steal here. We'll see. But there's a lot.
It's
there's
the
a lot left to prove for sure. But you know, the Blue Jays did start to address that, and you know, some that was kind of a blessing in disguise, in my opinion, because it looked pretty dismal before that. So there's at least some silver linings and some hope that these guys actually stick and that they can provide you with what you need at a lower cost in the midterm. But no matter how you look at it, Blake, it looks like there'll be a ton of work here for this front office.
Yeah, and that's the way it's always going to be, in especially in the American League East, but just in general. You've got to hit on so many things. And the important thing is here, the guy who's supposed to be in the middle of your order every day, that part is solved. That part, yeah, it's not a that's premium defensive position, but the guy who's going to hit second or third every single day for the next decade, that part's locked in. And generally, if you're building a team from scratch, that's one of the hardest spots that you're going to have to fill as you do this. It is easier to find a fourth starter or a guy who can hit seventh in the order and play some good defense than a guy who has the potential to, like Vlad has, I would not project him to hit 48 home runs again, but he's hit 48 home runs before. He's batted 323 before.
Right on.
Like that kind of guy is really impossible to find. In like, Juan Soto and Shohei Ohtani are not going to be free agents very often. Like, cool, Kyle Tucker is a free agent. Great. That's not there. Like, there's levels to that.
Yeah.
And having that part checked off, hey, second or third in the order every day for the next decade, that part is done. So let me ask you this. In terms of where the expectation level
yeah.
is for Vlad now moving forward, you know, it's not as simple as you got the contract, you have to play better now. But he has been pretty up and down over the last 4 years since he established himself. He had that banger 2021, again, 48 yeah. home runs. Hit over 300 by Fangraphs wins above replacement. He was more than a six win player, which, hey, $35.7 million. If you're a six win player, cool. Let's, you know, we're happy about that. We close that conversation. 2022, some of that went away. 32 home runs still, but only hit 274, was about a three win player. And then 2023 was very bad. Like 2023
was
arresting enough that it became very difficult to project him moving forward. It's like, the amount of guys who have shown six win capability and also been bad in their, you know, fourth season in the league is a pretty small group. And then you get into the fact that there are some things about Vlad that are a little hard to project. He's a first baseman slash DH over the life of this deal. He, at least by the metrics we have available, isn't a very good base runner. So all the value is going to come with the bat. And then you get into, if you look at first base DH types and particularly first base DH types who are a little thicker. And I don't mean this as like a body shame. They just like that body type.
Yeah.
The historical precedent is all over the place.
That's what I was going to ask you. It just seems so odd, right? It's a tough deal to place in the history of the league, I guess.
Right. And like probably the three best comps I think you would look at. And Prince Fielder is the best comp contractually.
Okay.
Because 2011, which is 14 years ago, this is nice and tidy. He signed, what was it? A 9-year, $215 million deal that everyone at the time thought was bonkers. Now, 9-year, $215 million deal, no one would blink at that. Like $24 million a year, even for, like, that's less annually than Vlad got in arbitration this year for a very good first baseman. And Prince Fielder fell off a cliff and was like released with 3 years left on his deal, but he also had a bunch of neck injuries. Like it wasn't just a performance decline. It was an injury related performance decline. The other two comps, if you look at Vlad's hitter type and stuff like that, David Ortiz, who didn't start being David Ortiz until he was like 28 and his peak lasted until he was like 36. Like in terms of aging for that profile, easily the best case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Miguel Cabrera, who similarly had to move off of third to first, signed a deal that everyone was like, yeah, he's pretty good, but the back end of that is going to be tough. And then he at least remained a 300 hitter like for a really long time.
Right.
So there is a mix of if you have a David Ortiz level late peak and you can sustain it for like 8 years of playoff window, that's unbelievable. If you're Prince Fielder and you're one injury away from now all the values, like you're just like such a huge risk because if you lose that little bit, you can't come back. And then Miguel Cabrera somewhere in between where he always remained really good, but like, or remained really good through his prime years. And then like the last 5 years of his career, it was like, it's fun to have Miguel Cabrera around.
Right on. Let's go on a tour of baseball ballparks.
Yeah.
And people come over to watch Miguel Cabrera's farewell season or whatever it is. Yeah. Tough one to sort of place, tough one to predict. I mean, one thing that I think is pretty consistent, you can count on, you know, as securely as anything, is that Vladdy will give you average. He has been pretty good with that basically throughout his whole career. We have seen some stints where everything just disappears, and I was even going to mention that it's kind of funny that this deal came on the heels of him making the final out and swinging a slider out of the zone from Edwin Diaz to strand runners on first and second with a game on the line pretty much. But you kind of see those moments where he gets in his head and he's chasing a little bit more. But those moments don't tend to last an entire season. Mm-hmm. That is not necessarily who Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is as a hitter. He's got the eye for it, and he is going to make contact way more often than not. One thing that we have seen be as is inconsistent as anything, Blake, has been the power. And last year it was kind of the same deal where early on in the season he was hitting, but it was slap singles over and over and over again until the power came. But by that point, it's kind of too late.
Yeah.
The Blue Jays were out of it. by the time that the power sort of showed up again. So even when I look at what Vladdy is doing right now, it is a little off because he is chasing more, but this is not anything necessarily new. And usually what happens is he will start hitting the singles again and then the power will come. Now, is that a good way to sort of project your team or your star player for years and years to come? I don't think so. I believe that part of getting a deal like that is, you know, having the ability to find that consistency and being committed to finding that consistency a little bit more and starting the season on time and all of that. And we can talk about Anthony Santander in the same vein here, but you know, I believe that has to be a commitment as well of figuring out what it is about April and May that just prevent you from playing at your best and then going from there. But because we have seen these ups and downs in power, it becomes a little bit harder even to predict what would be a successful campaign for a guy like Vladdy.
Right. Like, this feels like an unfair baseline to set, but like, he needs to probably hit around 300 with 30 homers and 100 RBI.
I agree.
Like, if you are going to be, and the metrics don't like him defensively even at first base. Let's say you like his defense at first. Even if you're an average first baseman, like, nobody cares about your first base defense that much. And you're a below average base runner as much as you try hard. Like, there's not much way around it. We're talking, you got to hit 300, 30 homers, 100 RBI. That's kind of what the line has to look like. Like, that's almost table stakes now to just, like, start the conversation, which is a big bar. And he's also a fascinating guy because, like, Blue Jays fans get tired of hearing this. I'm very aware because of the ups and downs and things like that. And the fact that his actual production, with the exception of 2021, when he hit 48 home runs, has never quite lived up to like the Statcast stuff. But if you were like, I guarantee there are going to be Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus and Mike Petriello articles and stuff like that over the next couple of days looking at this. And they're all going to say he's not going to be worth $500 million because there's just like, as a bat only into your age 40 season, like, it's probably not realistic. But I would imagine they'll all say, in the short to medium term, this is a guy who had the number one, based on batted ball data and like swing and miss and walks and things like that, the number one expected batting average last year and a top five expected slugging and expected like overall offense. Like, he checks all the boxes of, if you are not married to the day-to-day ups and downs of it, someone with the 10,000 foot view is going to be like, no, he's one of the 5 or 10 best hitters in baseball. Unfortunately, with this deal, and I don't mean unfortunately in that like they shouldn't have signed it, there are obviously lots of reasons to sign this deal, and even if you end up overpaying a little bit over the life of the contract, it's going to be more than fine. What you would say, though, I think, is the Blue Jays are holding a larger share of the risk, given that the floor is fairly low if something were to go in Vlad or Vlad were to have a bad season. So pressure's on to now be that, to your point, to not have a, you know, hey, my OPS is 670 on May 4th, 2024. It's no, you got to be, this guy kind of out of the gate and a little bit more consistent.
It's pretty funny how perspective changes the way that you look at a player, right? Mm-hmm. Because Blue Jays fans watching Vladdy every day will tell you a very different story than, say, a national reporter, mm-hmm. or someone who comes in, looks at the numbers, looks at the highlights or whatever it may be, and makes their projections. It's a, that to me is a pretty fascinating discussion, and I can completely understand, you know, that there is a ton of concern, and there is a portion of the fan base that's not necessarily super happy about this deal, especially about the value of this deal.
Yeah, I think you kind of, not to tell anyone how to be a fan, like, I think you are pretty unquestionably happy that he's staying a Blue Jay. Is he worth $500 million over 14 years? You know, should you be paying the ninth highest annual salary for a guy who's maybe the 15th to 20th best player in the league?
Right.
You know, if you look at wins above replacement, which is not everything, but like, it would have him graded a little lower than that even. You know, that's where the question comes in. But you want Vlad in your lineup every day for the next decade is the main takeaway.
You definitely do. And listen, like, Sho Ali and I were talking about this a little bit over the weekend, because there was just so many rumors floating around. You don't know what to believe. You don't even know where to look. But, you know, Sho and I sort of differed in opinions here, because he said, listen, this puts a lot of pressure on Vladdy now, if this deal actually gets done, for him to go out there and produce and be the star player and be the $500 million player. I kind of disagree with that because I think that we have seen just how much Vladdy can change when he is actually locked in and having fun and just playing with ease in the way that is, you know, his sort of signature, and when there is something weighing on his mind. And, you know, even though he will say that he's deferring to his agent and he's not really paying attention to that, he's paying attention.
And he's getting asked about it, like, after games. Like, hey, we saw this on Twitter during the game. What do you think?
So who knows, right? Yeah. It may just open up some real estate in his mind to just go out there and hit, which is, you know, his job.
Yeah, and hopefully that starts this weekend because, again, he has historically hit at Fenway Park. We'll see if we get tonight's game in. They will start a series against the Red Sox, a four set at Fenway tonight. Richard Fitz, Garrett Crochet, Tanner Houck, and Walker Buehler on the Sox side. Easton Lucas, Jose Berríos, Kevin Gausman, and Chris Bassitt on the Blue Jays side. Coming off getting, by the way, Jays swept at the hands of the Mets over the weekend. The Red Sox, get this if you're the St. Louis Cardinals. You scored 20 runs and had 36 hits over a weekend series.
Yep.
And you got swept.
Wow. That is intense.
That's how well the Red Sox are hitting right now. They have Rafael Devers. He woke up. The concern over the first couple days of the season, gone. Just fine. I guess Tristan Casas isn't really hitting, but they put up 18 on the Cardinals in the second part of a doubleheader yesterday. 20 runs for the Cardinals, and they didn't win a game in that series.
Yeah, I'll tell you that it is time for the Blue Jays offense to wake up, especially when you have Easton Lucas on the mound. No disrespect to Lucas. He did very, very well in his first start, gave the Blue Jays exactly what they needed on the heels of the Max Scherzer situation. But this is not the Washington Nationals lineup. This is a different lineup. And if he doesn't get some run support, it's possible that things are going to get ugly pretty fast, Blake. Obviously, you know, Richard Fitz is a different starting pitcher than what they saw in the Mets series. And we kind of saw just how good that Mets bullpen is. But also, there were chances. There were bases loaded multiple times. And there were pitches straight down the middle and hanging sliders that didn't, you know, that were just fouled off or whatever it may be. That can't happen here against a division opponent, a four-game series with the Red Sox hitting the way that they are.
And you have to hope you get tonight's game in because the Red Sox had to play a doubleheader yesterday due to weather. So seven of their bullpen arms got used yesterday. So no one's pitched in back-to-back, but you're kind of looking to get on top of that bullpen.
Absolutely.
While you can here. Richard Fitz, by the way, throws 96. And against righties, though, leads sweeper slider first. Then we'll go to a pair of different fastballs. Lefty's going to see a different mix from him. Blue Jays, Vlad actually has a double against him, and Kirk went 2-for-3 against him when they saw him briefly last year. Time now for Fast Break, brought to you by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. This is, of course, normally a segment on the Raptors show, but we'll do it today on baseball. So it is Jays at Red Sox tonight at 6:40 if we get it in. It's on Sportsnet with Dan Buck and Hazel. It's on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, with Ben Schulman and Chris LaRue. Jamie Campbell and Joe Siddle have you for Blue Jay Central before the game. And Shai is on the scene. I'm sure there'll be lots coming from Shai Davidi up at sportsnet.ca. The Red Sox are -130 favorites, over-under set at 8.5. If you're looking at Vlad line, +550 for a home run. Obviously, he's been shut out on the season so far. And then total bases over 1.5 is at -110. So basically, a coin flip if Vlad gets two bases there. Again, 1.054 career OPS at Fenway. I kind of think it would have been, if I were booking this, I'm going to go wrestling brain here, and I got the pencil, and I'm booking the show. We would have got the news tonight instead because we would have had the experience of Red Sox fans cheering Vlad a lot today because they want him and they're thirsty, corny, et cetera. And then tomorrow they boo him because he's re-upped with the Blue Jays. What do you think? Cold reception?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely cold reception.
Oh, that was Fast Break, by the way, brought to you by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. So, yeah, cold reception for Vlad in Fenway.
Here's what I would do, okay? I would let Vladdy just hit a home run over the monster. He rounds the bases. Someone is waiting with a home run jacket. Ross Atkins is waiting with the contract and a pen.
It's in the pocket of the jacket.
Wouldn't that? Oh, yeah, that would be good. But, yeah, definitely a cold reception for Vladdy. You know, we kind of saw He was one of the players that the Mets cheered. Not this time.
No, good one from Chris Cotillo, who covers the Red Sox yesterday. The Vlad news comes down, and he just posts, well, Tristan Casas is the first base of the future for the Red Sox again. All right, this has been a fun Emergency Jays Talk Plus. Julia, thanks for making it in. Thanks to Dan Shulman for joining us. Thanks to Amit Mann, Austin Mackey, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Blair and Barker have you covered 2 to 4 and post game as well. We'll be back tomorrow to do the Raptors show. Have a wonderful Monday.